From the KTO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton with a local and state news update. 25 years ago, the Alaska legislature made it illegal for lobbyists to raise money for political candidates. The idea was to reduce the role of special interests in the legislative process, since lawmakers might have a harder time saying no to lobbyists who help with campaign fundraising. But some of Alaska's most influential lobbyists have been helping to boost fundraising efforts by the governor, House Speaker, and powerful state senators. Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk investigates.
Alaska law bans lobbyists from fundraising for political candidates. But one of the state's highest paid lobbyists, Jerry Mackey, acknowledges that he's distributed invitations to political fundraisers for candidates including the governor and House Speaker.
Well, yes, I have occasionally sent out emails to clients and friends for a couple of fundraisers for political candidates.
I talked to Heather Hebden, the head of the state's lobbying enforcement agency, the Alaska Public Offices Commission. Hebden wouldn't speak on tape, but she says the plain language of the law makes it pretty clear that emails like the ones Mackey has sent aren't allowed. David Finkelstein agrees. He's a former state legislator who helped write the fundraising ban more than 25 years ago.
It's disingenuous to claim that promoting a fundraiser is not fundraising. It's the same thing.
Finkelstein says this stuff is important because of the way lobbyists can accumulate power by fundraising for candidates. If a lobbyist has helped a lawmaker get into office, it can give the lobbyist leverage when they're pushing the lawmaker to vote a certain way. Finkelstein says he experienced something like this when he was in the legislature, when a lobbyist was trying to get a bill through Finkelstein's committee.
There was definitely a message from him connecting past and future contributions to my support.
Finkelstein says the lobbyist had helped raise money for Finkelstein's political campaigns. The lobbyist's suggestion was that if the bill died in Finkelstein's committee, the lobbyist would stop helping Finkelstein with his campaigns. Or, Finkelstein says, he would even help raise money for Finkelstein's challenger.
I had many experiences where I would have, you know, a lobbyist or a set of lobbyists mad at me because somehow they assumed that they'd help me and I was going to vote their way. That sort of connection occurs all the time, and that was what the new law was designed to rein in.
Hebden, from the Public Offices Commission, says that if there's a trend of lobbyists sending out invitations, her agency will at least have to ask them to stop. The state can also criminally prosecute a lobbyist who knowingly breaks the lobbying law, with a fine of up to $1,000 and up to a year in prison for a conviction. The lobbyists say they were acting with the blessing of their enforcement agency. Mackey says that before he sent out any invitations, he got a letter from an agency employee that references a caveat in the law. The caveat says that in spite of the fundraising ban, lobbyists can still, quote, personally advocate on behalf of a candidate.
And I'll quote directly from the letter. It says, "You asked about passing along information to friends and clients regarding fundraisers or events for candidates you personally advocate for. And I determined that as long as you're just informing them, and in no way connected to the fundraiser, there's not a problem."
Ashley Reed, a longtime lobbyist in Juneau, says it's been common knowledge in his industry that emailing fundraiser invitations is an okay thing to do. But Hebden, the enforcement chief, says lobbyists have only received informal advice from her staff, which won't protect them from a complaint. Her agency's guidance is only binding when its politically appointed commissioners issue a formal advisory opinion, which lobbyists can ask for. Reed and Mackey, the two lobbyists, both say that if the commission decides that it's not kosher for them to send the emails, they'll stop. Here's Reed.
If they say it's no longer copacetic to do, then I'll stop immediately. I won't do it again until I see something to the contrary.
But the lobbyists also say they're frustrated to hear two different opinions from officials at the state agency that polices them. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Six local candidates for state office met Tuesday night to discuss fiscal and social issues facing Juneau, Southeast, and Alaska. With three open seats in the November 6th election, Juneau will have an entirely new legislative delegation come January. KTOO's Adeline Baxter has more from the forum.
Moderator and Juneau Empire reporter James Brooks started off with questions about the state budget. asking candidates to share their fiscal plans and examine what state services they would cut if given the choice. They all agreed on the legislature's decision last session to cut Alaska Permanent Fund dividends to pay for state services. Sarah Hannon and Chris Diamond both said the draw was necessary, as is the need to establish a state income tax. They're competing for Representative Sam Keto III's seat in District 33. That district includes Douglas, Lemon Creek, Thane, downtown Juneau, Skagway, Haines, Gustavus, and Clequan. However, Hannon and Diamond differed on how long that tax should stick around. Diamond, an independent, would like to see the tax be a temporary solution until state revenue becomes sustainable again.
I believe that if we keep it at a dollar and do not take that tax off of the books, it keeps future legislative bodies from spending out of control, and it helps hold them accountable for our government.
Hannon, a Democrat, said that she doesn't see oil tax revenue returning to its former level, and the state's deferred maintenance backlog can't wait.
I think a 1% income tax last year would have generated $750 million. We wouldn't have had to use the permanent fund if we'd passed that bill, House Bill 115.
Brooks asked candidates about their stance on red flag laws, legislation letting families or courts restrict gun access for individuals who may pose a threat to themselves or others. Democrat Andy Story and Republican Jerry Nan Curvis are competing for Representative Justin Parrish's seat in District 34. That district includes the Mendenhall Valley, Auk Bay, and Out the Road. Story said she supports the concept of red flag laws, but has heard concerns about whether they do enough to identify mental health risks.
And I know we want to protect Second Amendment rights in the state of Alaska, but we have to also balance how do we address our mental health needs.
Nan Curvis said he does not agree with legislation because law enforcement already has the ability to remove weapons from the homes of at-risk individuals.
There is that ability already in place, and it's being utilized throughout the state, and it has been for many years.
Additional topics covered include the state's role in addressing climate change, affordable child care, and health care access. For his final question, Brooks asked candidates how they would increase the number of Alaskans voting in each election. Statewide voter turnout was nearly 61% in 2016 during the presidential election, but 56% for the 2014 midterms. Several candidates praised the state's new automatic voter registration program when Alaskans apply for PFDs. Senate District Q candidate Jesse Keel, a Democrat, said registration should be as close to universal as possible.
It's vitally important that Alaskans call the shots. Not those of us with enough ego to put our names on the ballots. Alaskans need to be the check and the balance and the decision makers.
Independent Don Etheridge, who's facing Keel in the Senate race, said he's seen the impact that negotiating time off to vote into union contracts can have.
It really made a major difference in our turnout from our locals when you give them the time off to go do it.
Early voting begins October 22nd at the State Office Building and the Mendenhall Mall. In Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter.